What's going on, everybody? This week, we're taking you on an adventure, talking about an activity that I truly enjoy, squirrel hunting. Squirrel hunting is something I grew up doing with my dad every year after deer season closed, and it's something I now do with my kids. It's a low-pressure hunting environment and an absolute blast. Not to mention, squirrels are great table fare. We aren't talking just any old squirrel hunting, though. This week, we're joined by Spencer with Rusty River Game Dogs to talk about the mountain feist and how he hunts squirrels with his squirrel dogs. Make sure when it comes time this summer to refit your climber, you head over to the Hasmore Outdoor Products at hasmore.net and get a silent seat for your climber. When you do, you'll thank me later. Use code UPO15 at checkout for 15% off your next order. Let's jump into the show. I'm your host, Will Krebs, and this is the Under Pressure Outdoors Podcast. I'm your host, Will. I got Jordan here with me tonight.
I'm here. Let's get it.
I got Vince.
Yep.
I got Jim.
Yes, sir.
And we have Spencer with Rusty River Game Dogs, right? Rusty River Game Dogs?
That's right, yeah.
That's your TikTok handle?
That's my TikTok, yeah. I went with Game Dogs. It's a little broad, and some people take it the wrong way, but it's just because they'll chase just about anything. You know, they're squirrel dogs by trade, but you get them on the wrong path, and they'll go after it.
I got to ask about the Rusty River handle. Is that in reference to a specific Rusty River up in the area?
No, so that's actually one of the dogs' name is Rusty, and the other one's River. And I wanted to come up with a name, you know, obviously not just for the TikTok handle, but whenever I do eventually breed and kind of fall into that. And I was like, you know, everyone has these cool names, and I don't live near any cool lakes, and I don't have all this property. So I was like, I'll just combine their two names. It sure sounds good enough, you know, Rusty River. And then, the Game Dogs, because they chase everything. So I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds official enough.
That is pretty awesome. You are just west of, you know, some pretty epic brown water, though, in the Apalachicola River Basin. So
absolutely, yeah. And then south of us, you know, we got the beautiful Gulf Coast. So just kind of a haven for all things, you know, outdoors right now. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be 5 minutes from, you know, the woods that I'm able to drop these dogs in, just with Eglin Air Force Base, you know, having thousands of public acres to hunt. It definitely helps just being able to get out there as much as possible.
Is that easy to access? Do you have to have any kind of special permitting to hunt that base up there?
So, I mean, other than you have to have a permit for your dogs, obviously, just, you know, if you're running deer dogs. With the squirrel dogs, I'm not really subject to that, but most people in there are running deer dogs. And then on top of that, you just have to have, you know, a special permit for that land to go use it. But it's all pretty attainable. They just, you know, they just want the $50. And then once you pay it, you're pretty much set to go. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, you can run that whole area, never really bump into anybody. I'm actually, even though I know there are other squirrel dog hunters around me, I'm the only person I've ever seen out there squirrel hunting. Most guys have deer dogs. So I'd like to think I've kind of figured out a very private patch, maybe. You know, maybe I haven't bumped in anybody just yet, but I mean, for the past couple of years, I've been the only one in the woods when I go, and it's very fortunate.
You ever pack them up and take them further east? Do you ever get into like Hell's Tate, places like that, Apalachicola?
Tate's Hill.
Yeah, Hell's Tate.
Your brain's fried. It's got to be the heat, man.
I ain't right, as we discussed in the podcast ago. I got in a boat accident, but yeah, Tate's Hell. I apologize. Hell's Taint.
So I've never been over that way. I mean, obviously, I do know some guys over there, and it seems to be that the hog dogs are really big over there. And I try to steer clear of going for the hogs or being in that area, even though they're everywhere around us. It's just because my dogs are smaller. I mean, I think, you know, my dogs, the biggest one's 28 pounds, the other one's 20 pounds. So while they could, you know, maybe outrun it, if they didn't outrun it, I'd be in for it. So I try to stay a little bit more dry ground in my area. And it's interesting, you know, most of Florida is a swamp and kind of be lower level, but I've actually been able to find some oddly hilly areas where I'm at. It's interesting. Like, you know, you get far enough out there, again, you won't bump into anybody, and just, you would never know it's there if you didn't go looking for it.
So what breeds are you running? Beagles?
No, so I have they're called Feist. And the word Feist is really just kind of a word for like a small hunting dog. If you were to like Google what Feist, kind of where it derives from. But, and this is kind of a fun subject in the Feist community. I have two different types of Feist. One is a Tring Feist and the other one is a Mountain Feist. And, you know, depending upon who you ask, there are different characteristics for each one. The simplest way to put it is Mountain Feist have to have the high standing, tall prick ears. And then Tring Feist are going to be a little bit smaller frame, with kind of droopier, you know, hound like ears. But you know, those dogs are, I'm telling you, they're really something. I mean, if you look into what people use them for, people use them for rabbits, you know, for squirrels are kind of going to be the most predominant thing. But then there's people over in England that use it for like, you know, like rat, I guess you'd call it trials. Like they basically go to these barns and lift up, like hay bales and just catch rats. I mean, so they're varmint dogs at the heart.
So these things look like Cairn Terriers then, or?
So the one of them, like the Tring Feist, kind of looks a little bit more like a lanky Jack Russell with some tall legs.
Okay.
But like my Mountain Feist, for example, he's been mistaken for a heeler before just because he's thick. I mean, they're not supposed to be.
He's a thick boy.
You know, he's papered up, but he's a thick dog. I mean, people ask me all the time, how big is that dog? Whenever, you know, I go post them on something, and you might hear them bumping around right now. They're house dogs too. So they're always making some noise. But yeah, they're a lot of fun, man. They also have two different hunting styles, you know, like one of them is your traditional kind of walk along. You just shoot some squirrels out to it. He'll tree them. And then the other one go in there 300-400 yards, lock on a tree. And, you know, he's treed coons before. So it really just depends on what you want to do. And how you want to do it.
You know how much money I'd pay to see a rat trial?
I used to have one in my hay barn, except I did it with a revolver and some rat shot. I'd flip that 4x8 sheet of plywood up and go to town.
I
was like the OK Corral in that barn.
We've sat in an old horse barn, like a feed barn, and we would sit there in the dark and drink beer, and we're just talking. You could hear the rats start scurrying across the rafters. Everybody get quiet for a second. One guy leaned back and flip the switch, flip the light on, and we all had BB pistols.
CO2 pistols.
Yeah. CO2 BB pistols. Just pop, 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 as they run across the rafters.
Just like killing stuff.
Yeah, you killed 20 or 30 rats in a night. But they're all in there because they're in the horse feed and everything else. I mean, so it was, we're doing a good service, right. And we had a hell of a time doing it.
Right, well, it sounds like these little ratters are onto squirrels.
So, I'm not sure how you use them. Do you use them in tandem? Do you use one that's more of a – go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer to take them out one by one. And the reason is they're just a handful. I mean, you know, that's just my experience. Some people will take out all their dogs and let them go, and they all tree, and they stay on their, you know, tree, or they pack up and go to one. But, you know, I've had the luck of having dog, you know, one of them cross the highway, and then I got to go get them. And, I mean, I can see them on the GPS, but it doesn't make it any easier when you're – you know, 1 mile this way, and he's another mile the other way. So that can be, you know, its own challenge.
All gas, no brakes.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And I tell you, you know, the thing is with these Feist, if you, let's say you were talking to a guy who had like a big hound or something, they'll kind of throw some shade on some Feist. They'll, you know, they're like, oh, those little dogs, you know, little house dog. It's just kind of the reputation they get, but I'm telling you, it just takes you going with one. You go with one and you're like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I mean, I don't need to feed a 60-pound hound. I can have a 20-pound dog that sleeps at the foot of my bed and, you know, does the same thing if he's trained the right way.
So what you're telling me is these Feist make dog hunting accessible for people who may live in the city and can get out on the weekends and go find some good hunting area.
Absolutely. I mean, I live in a one bedroom apartment. I mean, I don't even have a backyard. I walk these dogs every day. That means if I hunt them, and when I'm in the season, I'm hunting them every day. That means I'm washing them every day. Thankfully, you should see me. My apartment has a car wash. I go take the hose out there and wash them like it's my truck. You know, I got my boots out there, got my waders or whatever, you know, draped over the side. People are looking at me like, who is this guy? I live in an HOA neighborhood. They think I am nuts.
Well, I mean, I bet that makes...
There's a redneck again. Dang redneck again.
That's right. They know.
I bet that makes those dogs even more driven when it's like, load up, we're going hunting. They just go nuts. Like, they know they're going out to the woods.
Yeah, I was gonna say we're all pretty respectful of the North American, you know, wildlife conservation model and all, but at the end of the day, we all very much just respect straight killers. Doesn't matter, big dog, little dog, dude, person, fat guy, slow guy, doesn't matter. You're killing, you're in the club.
I look at game laws as like bumpers on the bowling lane, man. I'm just here to knock down pins, you know.
Oh, man, I tell you, I found myself in this was a year and a half ago. I found myself in a real predicament, and I'll be honest, it literally pays or saves to read up on the laws, because you will find yourself in an interesting time. I mean, I really didn't know. I figured if I was out there, this was a year and a half ago, and I figured at the time that if I went to the woods, and they were the dog woods that I usually go to, the dog hunting area, and if I didn't have a gun, even though it wasn't season, that I could still go out there and tree squirrels. And really, you can in the summertime if you don't have a gun on you. You know, if you had like a sidearm just in case you saw something, that's fine. But no one's going to really mess with you. Well, when I went, it was the middle of turkey season, and I had no idea. I mean, just clean, no clue.
Oh, man. So I'm in there. Them guys live for that 6 weeks.
Oh, man. I'm public enemy number one. I mean, I'm sorry if I scared anybody's birds. I really am. But they were in there just tearing it up. It's funny because they looked great that day. I mean, they looked fantastic. I was like, oh, what a day. What a day. You know, we get back to the truck. Here comes the guy. And I'm thinking, all right, well, I don't have my gun on me. Like, it's all good. Just going to, you know, give my info and be about my way. And sure enough, he's like, what are you doing out here? It's turkey season. And I mean, I'd have paid to get a picture of my face when he said that. I mean, what else can you say? I was like, well, I'm sorry. You know, I didn't kill anything. I don't see any other trucks out here. I gave him every excuse, and he definitely softened the blow, you know, but they definitely knew who I was after that for a little bit.
Man, that was interesting. You know, though, if you break the law well enough, they will make a picture of your face public information.
I mean, hey, I might be out there somewhere. No, I think I broke it really good that day.
If you break the law good enough, they'll make a law for you.
Yeah, but he was just running dogs. There's no law against running dogs. He wasn't carrying a gun.
So specifically, though, most wildlife management areas that allow you to do things like during turkey season, they are it's turkey hunting.
Just as sportsmen in general, like, I'm not a big guy in the deer woods, and I turkey a little bit, but it's, you know, I'm a duck guy, right, and a bass fisherman. And, you know, the bass fishermen aren't hunters at all, but we all kind of have to pay a little bit of attention to the other people who use the outdoors, because those bass fishermen will troll right through and pull off, like, 6-year decoys. And they're like, what? I'm allowed to bass fish. It's like, yes, you are. And I love bass fishing. And I got a glitter princess, too. But for 60 days out of the year, if you mess up my duck hunting, we are going to have a fight in the parking lot.
That's right. So, yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think we all gotta work together, because at the end of the day, there's a lot more people who'd rather none of us be out there at all.
Exactly.
Anything. Yeah, but what you were doing was in genuine ignorance. Yeah, you didn't know.
It happens. And
you weren't going out and jacking a guy up.
And for most of the cases, if the bass fisherman's like, sorry, bro, I didn't even know. And most of them don't know what hunting seasons are. And so I let them off with the pass. And, you know, it's not a big deal. But if they get a little cocky, I'm like, I'll see you at the boat ramp, sir.
So what made you decide to get into squirrel hunting with dogs? Because it's like, it's something nobody, if you think about it, you're like, that's cool as shit.
Oh,
like,
man.
I'd love to do that.
I mean,
but it's not something you hear about a lot of people doing.
Before you get started on that, ever since we had a terrier as a kid, because Jordan and I grew up with a rat terrier. That dog lived to be like 22 years old.
Yeah,
but you talk about a dog treeing squirrels. That dog would just stalk and kill squirrels like a cat.
Right. Oh, it knew. I know a lot of dogs that'll stalk squirrels. They'll chase them, but heaven forbid when they get to them, they're like, well, now what do I do?
Oh no, she was successful.
She was a straight killer. Times.
She would get them and just shake them to death.
Oh yeah, man.
Yeah, she'd run up the tree. She'd get 6 or 7 feet up a tree after him.
And grab it on the way up. Huh?
Would she bring him back and present him to you, or was it just shake the shit?
I don't know that we ever gave her the opportunity to do so, because it was, you're always watching her like do the attack, and she gets it, and you get all excited, you run out there to her, and it's dead by the time you get there.
This leads me to a really interesting question. Your dogs ever catch a squirrel halfway up the tree?
Yeah, so he did it one time. Well, one of my dogs did, and he actually ended up throwing it to the ground, and then it ran into a hole in the ground. Which at that point, I mean, I just stuck the end of the gun in there, and that was pretty much into that. But it was a very, like, the whole chase process of that, because it was originally was treed pretty high up and mm-hmm. it just started to timber down, and he just stayed with it, and I had just walked in. I mean, I just happened to get there in time, and as I'm in there in time, I mean, I'm looking at it like, there's no way this squirrel's coming down to the ground. I'm like, what an idiot. And sure enough, my dog just gets up there, snatches it, throws it to the ground, it runs, goes into the hole, and then, you know, end of story at that point. But
nice.
Yeah, as far as, you know, getting into this, though, I mean, it was not something I was like, you know, I feel like most people who squirrel hunt or just hunt with dogs in general are probably raised into it. Somebody in their family showed them. I just fell into it. I mean, I really think it was like a God's plan for me to have this dog, to have these dogs and do this, because, I mean, I basically was, this was 2020, again, living in an apartment. I've never had a house and land. So all this is very accessible to the, you know, to the weekend warrior type hunter, as I guess you could say. I basically just went on Craigslist because I wanted a dog. I mean, I'm 25. I was, you know, 21 or so then. I was like, I just want a dog. Come walk in the woods with me or go fish with me, whatever. So I just was clicking through whatever was available. And sure enough, I find my first dog, Rusty. He was $100 and didn't say anything about a Fife or a squirrel dog. Just said, you know, small, like mixed hunting dog. And I was like, okay, works for me. They just were like, oh yeah, you know, we've used them in the past for squirrels, but you know, this one's a companion, whatever. So I talked to them on the phone. I go meet up with them. When I met up with them, that was the craziest experience of my life. I knew instantly something was wrong. It was the weirdest thing. This older lady got out and gave me the dog. Her son was in the truck, but he wouldn't even make eye contact with me. I was like, this is wild. But you know, here I am. I just wanted the dog. So I took it. Well, I ended up figuring out why he probably wouldn't make eye contact with me. That dog was, and I still have him, scared of everything, gun shy, had worms, underweight, had this crazy weird skin infection. I mean, we went through the ringer. I paid all this money to get him fixed up. And at that point, by the time he was healthy, he was so freaked out. I was like, man, I'm never going to even take this dog anywhere. He's just going to, you know, what am I going to do? And sure enough, one day I was working at a place on Pensacola Beach. That's where I'm originally from, is Pensacola. And this guy had a dog, and I swore this was my dog. Like, I don't know how I thought he had my dog, but I just went up to him and I was like, hey man, where'd you get this dog? And he's, you know, kind of looking at me crazy, starts talking to me, begins to explain what a feist is. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. Well, I guess maybe my dog's a feist. Like, he looks the same. I showed him some pictures. He was like, oh man, you should look into that. Like, they are really good hunt dogs. Next thing you know, Facebook detective, I'm looking into every feist, you know, dog group on Facebook. And all these people are like, yeah, I think that's what that is. You know, you should try hunting them. And sure enough, one day I you know, ended up moving out to where I live now. And next to me, there's a school getting built, but it used to just be 30 acres of just open woods. Like, nothing was there. And I just would walk through the woods. And one day he treed a squirrel. And then I realized, oh, like, this is he's doing it. Like, he's really doing
natural born, you know? Killer.
No, exactly. I mean, it was insane. I mean, he took to it so well. And I remember just thinking, wow, like, this is crazy. I never thought I would get into this. Started talking to a few people on Facebook. Again, they really pushed me. There's a really good community out there for squirrel hunting. They pushed me to get into it. And then, you know, now I've got two dogs. The second dog, I will say, cost a lot more than the first dog, you know, because now I'm kind of in it. And I got the collars and the dog box and all that. So it was an investment.
So you didn't start hunting until your dog did. So your exactly. dog got you into hunting?
Exactly. I mean, I grew up fishing. I didn't do any hunting. I didn't even have a shotgun. He treed, and about a month later, I bought a gun.
That's the Brian Hell Miller story, too. Mm-hmm. I got the dog, just wanted a dog, found out the dog had a lot of energy. Oh, these dogs are good bird dogs. Now he's a diehard quail hunter.
That was one of the things when I spoke to Spencer. I don't know if it was the first time, I don't know how many times I was supposed to call you and forgot to call you. Eventually when I did, though, and then I found out that he got into squirrel hunting and hunting because of his dogs. It's the first thing I thought of was Brian and the bird dog.
How many people have we talked to that are dog guys? And the reality is they're dog guys. They're not hunters who use dogs. They're dog guys who happen to hunt.
Right. Just
trying to make their dog live their best life.
No, man. And
doing it for the dogs.
I say this every time I have a dog guy on. The antis are all about the dog hunting, and they're trying to shut that down first because it's the, right, you always make it out like we're abusing the dogs and how evil, and they don't really want to do it. And I'm like, if you've ever been with them, I don't care if it's a pig dog, a deer dog, a squirrel dog, a bird dog. Like, as soon as those dogs know that it's game on, Like, they are the happiest that you ever see them.
That, what Spencer's talking about, that's the prime example of how that dog was. That dog wants to do that.
That's what they
the
do.
The condition that the dog came from, and you got it healthy, right. And it was gun shy, and now that dog hunts. Right. That's what he loves to do.
Yeah, we screwed him up by making Pomeranians, man. Yeah. That's not what they're supposed to do.
Well, it's funny, you know. I mean, you guys said, you know, doing it for the dog, and it really is. It's like once he started doing that, once I turned it on, I couldn't really turn it off, you know. And this second dog, I will say, like, you know, Rusty is the older dog. He's about to be 4.
You got one on each side of you. I see you keep looking down to either side.
Yeah, they're both in my bed now. They keep looking at me like, why are you saying my name so much? But yeah, Rusty, the older dog, he didn't really tree, like I said, till he was almost a year old. I mean, he was behind just because health. And I'm going to assume that situation that he came from, because I don't really know the background, wasn't that great. And, you know, he took some of that with him. And there's still some things to this day where it's like he's just quirky about some stuff. But the other dog, you know, River, I actually went to Carrollton, Georgia, and got him from a breeder, Harris's Whipping Creek Kennels. They are great people. I mean, I can't say enough about just how healthy these dogs are and just good looking. I mean, I'll never forget pulling in their yard. I remember my dog, I was the last one to pick him up. His name's River. And I was like, oh, that's my puppy right there. And he was running out in the yard with his dad. And I was like, this is the start. Because at that point, I kind of knew what I was getting into. And I just was like, this is the start of something crazy. And it's turned into, I mean, he treated his first squirrel at 4 months old. He was on it. I mean, he just got it in him. I mean, like I said, Rusty will go 100 yards, come back. He's a real casual dog. But River, I've thought about branching into the competition side of things. I mean, he'll go a few hundred yards each time. It's nothing for him in a couple hours to run 5-6 miles. I mean, he's just got it. It's amazing.
It's crazy when you hear people talk about, like, dog people talk about bloodlines. But, you know, like you said, when you treat his first dog at 4 months, like, a bloodline really does play a huge part and how well a dog performs.
Oh, yeah. My brother got into duck dogs the same way. So I took him to buy his first lab. He wanted to have a lab. He had the idea that he kind of wanted to duck hunt with it. And we were all kind of fooling around with duck hunting, but we weren't really in it yet. But he's like, well, I'm on a duck hunt. I want a lab. So he goes to this breeder. And this is like a backyard kind of breeder. They got a double wide. They got the puppies like walled off in one room with like a baby gate. And he picks his puppy, and we get it. And he sends it to a trainer, and he gets it trained. And it gets some field trial experience. And he does all right. And then his next dog, he went to a, like, bloodline, you know, hunting breeder in Louisiana. Drove all the way to Louisiana to get his next dog, Louie. And Louie, he's like, dude, he's amazing. He's like, at 6 months, this dog out hunts Barrett with 4 years of experience. It's ridiculous. Like, this dog's natural instinct is so much higher than the puppy that I bought and paid and trained out of like a trailer park.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, I love both my dogs. They're great. And to be honest, one of the reasons I came up with the name Rusty and River is because, or you know, Rusty River Game Dogs. You know, not only did I want the cool name, but I'll end up breeding River. Like, I'm sure that will happen. I'm not going to breed Rusty. There's some traits that I don't feel are best to pass down, and I want to make that call now. So I wanted to create a name that I could stick it on some paper so it stays. He's always involved forever, but his bloodline is just not going to be my choice. You know,
yeah.
When I went and got River, if you look at his papers, I mean, he's got very heavy Combs blood from Hurley Combs stock dogs. And, you know, they pretty much all look exactly like River. I mean, most of their colors are the same as well. They're real big up in Kentucky, and you know, there's a lot of championships in there and or champion bloodlines. And, you know, one of the dogs is it's like called High Styling Cadillac Jack. And that's probably one of the bigger names in his breed for that to be on his paperwork, you know, really says a lot. And then there's also a lot of Steve Barker's dogs on the bottom as well. And, you know, I wouldn't say that you can't get a good dog without paperwork, because you can find a dog that doesn't have any papers that just is amazing. But it does pay to do the research and really look into that, because, I mean, I've seen the difference for sure.
So, go ahead.
You know what's funny? I hear you said High Style and Cadillac Jack, right, was the name of a dog.
Oh, yeah.
When you look into, like, bloodlines of dogs and you see their names on there, they're always like, once upon a time, there was a river named Molly. They called the dog Molly, but the right. full name, in order to separate it as a singular dog on a sheet of paper, is once upon a time, there was a river named Molly. That's like you have the high style and Cadillac Jack. It's they probably just call him Jack.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, my dogs, you know, again, I've yet to breed them yet. And I got that second name wrong. It's actually Steve Buckley. It's Buckley Dogs for anyone interested. They're a great line of dogs. But, you know, like River's full name is Big River. And it's just because he's just big and goofy for his breed. So I was like, Big River it is. And then Rusty is just, he's something else. And I always just call him, like, when I get mad at him, I call him Boy. So I just, you know, Rusty Boy seems to stick. But however, when I do begin breeding, it will be, you know, Rusty Rivers, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure I'll come up with some weird names. I look forward to it. You know, but being in an apartment right now, we ain't breeding no puppies in here. That's not going to happen.
Not quite conducive to that. Yeah.
So I was thinking earlier, you said that you've like found some hilly land where you are. Is that where you've found that you find the most squirrels is in the hills, or you find in, I mean, just the same amount of squirrels in your flatland areas too?
Yeah. So for me, I think the hills kind of hold them, I guess you could say, is, you know, there's a lot of dens in there. There's a lot of bigger trees, and it's just cause they're all rooted in these creek bottoms, you know? So I think you have a lot more, tall standing hollow trees that these squirrels can go up in. And that's just in my experience. And when I say hills, I mean, trust me, I'm sure somebody who's not from Florida would come in and laugh at me. And I was
15 feet of elevation change.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hill, son.
I'm sitting here, you know, walking up something that maybe took me 10 seconds of incline, and I'm puffing and puffing. So I can't really call it a hill, but, you know, there's a lot of deer woods near me, and I've tried the flatland where I've seen just some, like, you know, just rows of pines kind of thing. And I just don't really have as much luck. It seems to be that these gray squirrels like to den up and like to find these nests, and that's just going to be in that swampier area. Funny enough, I've also found, because of that, I've found myself in, you know, some snakes a few times. And, you know, there was a good time where I'm in sales and I can take calls from virtually anywhere. And, you know, if I'm off, you know, I'm still going to answer the call. And I'm talking to one of my clients and, you know, we're carrying on. And I just so happened to mute the phone and had it on speaker while I'm walking through. I go to step across the creek bottom that I've crossed a million times, and I sunk down up to my waist. I mean, I don't know what happened, but I just dropped. I mean, gun in the water, the whole thing. And I'm still on the phone. And next thing you know, my dog's treed. And I'm like, I just get a headache thinking about it. There was so much going on. I crawl out of the creek. I go up to my truck. My pants are, you know, dried black with mud. And, you know, I still finished that sales call. I got off of it and everything. But, you know, it's just, there's always a surprise out there. It's never simple. It's a never easy day.
More than once, I've been in the duck blind and the call comes in. I try to give them a heads up because, like, it'll be slow as shit. And sure enough, I'll be like, as soon as the phone rings, I'm like, boys, get ready. The duck's coming. No. And I'll be on the call. And I'll be like, well, we're in the duck blind right now. But so if you hear any noise, and also I'm like, hold on. Wah, 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 wah. You know, and then people like, what was that? I'm like, I told you I was in a duck blind. I'm like, they're like, did you just kill ducks? I was like, sometimes it's like, well, no.
We tried.
And other times it's like, we just laid them down.
Man, I have the same story. I had a guy come from corporate to roll film on me, and I answered a real estate call in the duck blind. And I was talking. I was like, yeah. And then the guy on the phone got off on his thing, and I was like, I elbowed him and I pointed at this guy and put it on mute and put it down on the boat, picked up the gun and was like, gah, 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 and then answered the phone. I was like, yeah, that was, yes, sir. That's real interesting. And he's like, did you just take a phone call and mute it and shoot a duck and then unmute it? I said, yeah, I did.
Unmute it, man. Let him hear it fly.
Nothing.
Let him hear the brass rattle.
Nothing says whitetail properties like
hunting whacking ducks while you're making real estate deals. Yeah, man, I mean, salesmen of the world unite.
In the industry that I'm in, I work in like rental properties for like vacation rentals and whatnot down on the beach. And I work with a lot of the homeowners. And, you know, when I got this dog box in the back of my truck, you know, I've worked for this company for 5 years. And again, I just got into this in the last three. So when I got this dog box, you know, they did not like it. I mean, it stuck out. It sticks out every day at the office. You know, we're in an area where people are driving, you know, very high-end vehicles, and that's not
all of your clients are from Alabama and around Atlanta. They ought to know.
Oh, you gotta watch the Karens, man. They'll go looking in your dog box and be like, "How dare you put those dogs in there?"
But well, it's funny though. So that was the concern, was, you know, the co-founders of the company, they're great guys, and they just said, "Hey, we don't, you know, we're not going to tell you to take it out. But if it does become a problem, you know, just keep that in mind. That's, you know, someone could get annoyed with it." I've made so many friends, so many connections. There's so many people that you would never expect that end up saying, you know, I haven't seen a dog box. You know, I've got people who are like, I live in California. I originally grew up in Mobile. I haven't seen a dog box in like 15 years. That's crazy. And then they ask about it, or my grandfather squirrel hunted. I mean, there was a guy, we didn't end up working together, but we still keep in touch. And he just asked me how the dogs are doing, just because he's an older guy and that's what he likes doing.
It really wasn't all that long ago that white-tailed deer weren't, I mean, or depending on how old you are, your grandfather or like would be like my great-grandfather. Well, no, I guess my grandfather too, born, they didn't have deer when he was a kid. They just weren't, they were there, but they weren't as plentiful as they are today. So small game was their bread and butter.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you, squirrel and quail, man, in Georgia. Quail,
you think about the classic Southern comedian Jerry Clower, all he ever talks about is small game, hunting rabbits, hunting squirrels, hunting quail.
Well, that's the myth that belies conservationism, is everybody thinks that there's less now because it's further in time than there was then. But conservationism has done such a good job for all game. I mean, wood duck is another story of the same ilk. It's like, you know, they were nearly hunted to extinction, and now with all the wood duck box programs, they're in bigger numbers than ever before.
Conservation as a whole, I mean, like right now we're in the, arguably in the heyday of white-tailed deer. We look at like the pictures of past of the everybody with the bucks laid out on the buck pole, everybody in their red flannel and the kind of off-color colored photograph or black and white photo, and you see all those deer and you're like, man, if only I could hunt back then. But numbers, white-tailed deer numbers today are far better than they were back then. It was just more prominent that people hunted then. So, and
yeah, but there wasn't anything to kill. Everybody complains about the competition today. I'm like, well, my granddaddy's day. I'm like, your granddaddy shot a deer a year if he was lucky.
But now
you shoot five in a couple of weeks.
You look again, like the turkeys kind of peaked in the 90s, and we're having troubles now with a decline, not necessarily a decline in population, but the population is kind of stagnated and headed towards a decline. And the question is, what do we do? Well, half the problem is
shoot coyotes.
That's trapping, right. The turkey numbers really started. You're right. The turkey numbers really started to drop when the fur market took a shit because everybody trapped fur for money. And then when you couldn't trap fur for money, then it started to go down, and they started making trapping illegal. Like here in Florida, you want to see more turkeys, man? Kill more possums, raccoons, coyotes, whatever else. And arguably, coyotes aren't your biggest enemy. Possums and raccoons likely are, and fire ants.
Yeah, but like,
man, if you got property and you want to keep turkeys on there, the best thing you can do besides trapping possums and killing every possum and raccoon you see is to take and carry around a bag of Seven Dust. Every time you're on your property, you see a fire ant bed, dump it on there because they're going to eat baby turkeys. I don't know if you've ever seen a baby turkey in the wild, but dude, they're teeny tiny. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you know, we're losing habitat.
Well,
there's no shortage of turkeys.
That goes back to kind of small game hunting. It seems like there's less opportunities now that we're more overpopulated in Florida than ever. Maybe not in your area. I don't know. We call ourselves Peninsula Boys down here. And, man, they are packing in.
You call yourself a Peninsula Boy.
Man, we are Peninsula Boys. I'll tell you what, that's what we call each other on Whitetail, because we got the guys in the Panhandle. We got just as many guys in the Panhandle as we do on the Peninsula. The Peninsula's blocked up by, like, Cody Worley north of me in Central Florida, that'd be Vince Phelps, and then Matt Bronson south of me. And we're pretty much the whole Peninsula, and we got the Panhandle blocked out. But, man, we are so packed down in here. And we're the Peninsula Boys. But, I mean, even with the tight registration of the amount of people that we have here at Yankees, there's still a lot of good hunting to be had for small game in some of these other wildlife management areas, which it can be difficult navigating yourself around wildlife management areas, I'll admit. That's why I picked up duck hunting. If I can launch a boat, I can shoot a bird. That's it, period, point blank. you know, every wildlife management area, you need to make sure to read the brochure. You need, so you don't have that situation that you ran into, but you got to make sure that you read the brochure and the dates and the times and if you can bring dogs. And it can almost seem like a science, and honestly, it's too litigious for me to really get into, so it's really kept me off wildlife management areas. I do a bunch of, like, sovereign land stuff, and, you know, if I'm in my boat, I can hunt, so suck it.
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as, you know, my area, it is surprising that I haven't bumped into more, I mean, squirrel hunters and whatnot. I mean, they're around. I'm connected with them on Facebook. Clearly, people reach out to me and whatnot. There's just a lot of guy with deer dogs. That seems to be the main thing around mm-hmm. me. I would be willing to say if I was running deer dogs, I might have a different take on how congested it is, because I've seen plenty of boxes and plenty of trucks that are just, by the grace of God, they're just not where I'm dropping my dogs. So, I've not been affected. But Walton County, where I live, is, you know, technically the fastest growing county in Florida at the moment. So, really? As far as, you know, well,
more
as far
so
as
than
development,
Osceola, Kissimmee area. Kissimmee St. Cloud, I think, takes in like 100,000 houses a year.
Oh, where he is, they're odd chain, man. We fought them tooth and nail on the Point Washington issue when they wanted to put a fucking super highway through there.
So it might be the most developing area.
Yeah, it's probably just per space. Yeah. As far as people coming here, yeah. I mean, because there's D.R. Horton builds going on everywhere. Oh, I mean, I live in the middle of D.R. Horton heaven, which is fine. You know, I mean, I'm not hating on everybody's got to live somewhere, you know.
Oh, man. Well, let's take a break real quick. The Under Pressure Outdoors podcast is brought to you in part by Hang Free. With a mission to provide top quality products for the best possible price, Hang Free believes that the saddle hunting experience is worth more than money. They create both tried and true products as well as debut new items to the saddle hunting community, creating a community of saddle hunters that don't have to break the bank to participate in a hobby that they love. Do yourself a favor and join the Hang Free family this hunting season. They truly have everything you need. Don't forget to use offer code UPO10 at checkout for 10% off your order at hangfree.co. So what, earlier you briefly mentioned maybe getting into competition. What is there squirrel hunting competition wise?
Oh yeah, there's some good options out there, and really, you know, you can get very breed specific. I could go to, you know, squirrel competitions that are just feist. I could go to an open dog event. You know, it really depends on the registry. You know, obviously you got like the National Kennel Club, you know, NKC and UKC, United Kennel Club, and they put on, you know, breed specific performances. But then you have like these offshoot registries, like probably the biggest one is, you know, the USDC, I think it's the Ultimate Squirrel Dog Club is what it stands for. But there's some big money hunts out there, and you know, they basically, you could have a poodle, as long as it's trained squirrels, you come bring it and try to, you know, win something. I mean, I think what people overlook is the money that goes into this. I mean, not every dog that's a good pleasure dog, that's just a good dog to take out there, is going to translate to a good competition dog. You know, it's a whole different game. You know, if you're taking a dog to hunt in the woods every day, you know, you might want it to chase a squirrel as it jumps through each tree, whereas you go to the competition and you'll get faulted for that. You want it to be more of a stick to the tree. You know, it's interesting. It's like you'd think you'd want to follow that squirrel, but sometimes that's that squirrel, you can't find that squirrel and he chases it, and you show up and that dog's not on a tree, you just lost points, you know. So it's all about, you know, who can tree the squirrel, who can get, you know, get gone the first and really stay in there once it gets treed. But I mean, there's people, man, they win brand new Ford Rangers. You know, they got truck hunts. They had one this past week, I think, first place, won over $12,000. That was one of the junior world hunts. I mean, there's definitely an avenue for the money. It's just, you just would never think it. I mean, there's dogs selling for $20,000 every day, you know.
Man, I love that in America, if you're into it, there is a market in it. That you can be like super into squirrel hunting, and there is money there for it. And that is awesome.
$12,000 for killing squirrels.
That's amazing.
Well, you don't even got to kill them at the competition. You're just training them.
Fuck that. If I can't kill them, I ain't doing it.
I feel like.
Oh, we're on UPO After Dark. Is this like an R-rated? Do we get like one half word?
We get a little naughty sometimes.
Okay. I feel like winning a Ford Ranger is like the epitome of, hell yeah, I hunt squirrels. Oh, I just want a brand new Ford, four-wheel drive Ford
truck.
Ranger.
I'm no stranger.
Ford Ranger.
I know that truck.
But of course, Ranger. Now when I think Ford Ranger, I don't ever think of these new Rangers that are the size of a Colorado. I think of that little tiny single cab short bed.
He's got the splash edition with like the 1990s drink cup graphics.
I think of that gold Ford Ranger that we had to sit facing each other in the back seat. Yeah.
I had a Ford Ranger. It was the best vehicle. I put almost 300,000 miles on that.
Yeah, thing. You know those trucks that had those seats where you're like, these surely aren't designed to fit people. They weren't. Is the CAFE standards on trucks? If there was less than, if it was two seats, it was a light truck. If it was four seats, it was a passenger vehicle. So they designed these useless seats in the back of the Ford Rangers so they could dodge the CAFE standards. That's why we can't get all the Toyota Hiluxes and cool stuff.
Me and a fella from back in my Disney lifeguard days drove a girl all the way back to New Mexico in one of those things, taking turns in that little rumble seat.
Jump seat.
Sideways, rode like sideways. Back when you could still sleep anywhere, man. We left like at 3 o'clock in the morning for New Mexico on a whim. It was brutal.
So what's holding you from
winning a Ford Ranger?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Jumping into the circuit.
Well, so, I mean, as much as I don't like people will hate on the Feist because they're smaller and, you know, maybe not the most competition style dog. And as much as I don't like to agree with that, there is some truth at some point in time that, you know, it's hard if you went to one of these hunts, you know, your dog could be treed in 300 yards away and you might be able to hear him when it's just you in the woods, but you're out there with four or five other dogs and they're all big hounds. You know, you might not hear your dog, so you can't call it treed. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, it's certain challenges. Then again, I could always just go to these Feist hunts. It's just the biggest thing is, you know, one, there's that little bit of self-doubt. Hey, will my dog translate to a good competition dog? I do believe he has the ability. I think he's shown me plenty of grit on the pleasure dog side of things. But it's just really, you know, hunting him by those rules. Because, you know, when you call your dog treat, it's not like y'all start walking. You actually have to wait a couple of minutes. It has to actually stay locked in. You got to show up. It has to be on the same tree. I mean, there's a lot of those little things that if you're just out there in the woods by yourself, you don't have to follow those rules.
Okay. You're a Feist loyalist. I get that. So in the competition dog world, what's the Cadillac here? Like, what are those other dogs that are making you maybe think that maybe I'll just stay pleasure dog side? I mean, what breeds are those? Like, what's a premier squirrel dog?
Yeah, I think the premier squirrel dog, if you look at what's winning right now, it's a cur dog. You know, you get these big dog.
Like cattle dog.
Yeah, but they're cross, so it'd be like a cur mixed with like a hound, you know, so you end up getting a treeing cur. So it might be like 35, 40 pounds. I mean, and there's dogs out there right now that's just kind of what the going thing is, because it is a mid-sized dog. You don't have to have this big old hound. And sometimes people mix them over with bird dogs. I've seen, you know, hounds crossed with a GSP, and it's just a good, good looking squirrel dog.
So it doesn't have to be of any kind of breed standard. Cause I mean, I had curs and I had some big blocky headed curs, and a lot of cowboys didn't like them because the blocky headed dogs tend to get hot quicker, but mm-hmm. they could also take a cow right off her feet when they grab her on the nose and sling her head. And I've seen them do that before. So, there's no necessarily, it's not like you have to register as a breed. It's just bring, you know, run with your brung kind of thing.
Absolutely, run with your brung. And I mean, hey, there's a Feist out there right now. His talk about these funny names. His name's Pissed Off Pig, and he's got to be less than 20. Well, he can he can tree some squirrels. Now he's probably less than 20 pounds, and he puts it on these big hounds. So it is possible. I mean, it's not to say you couldn't. But the other side of that is, I love my boys, and I mean they are my companions, and sometimes I'm like, man, I don't know if I want to go.
Don't want to put it on them like that.
Yeah, like I just enjoy what I do so much. It's such a blessing to be able to go and have fun, and you know, why ruin it?
Okay, I get that. Yeah, I totally get that.
Do they have trials, or is it just strict competition? Like, and I say trials, like, you know, you do like a bird dog trial where you're testing certain abilities of an individual dog instead of putting a bunch of dogs against each other in a pack.
Yeah, absolutely. So they have these, you know, I've seen water trials where they'll put, you know, a coon in a cage and they'll swim it across the pond, and all the dogs have to, it's a swim race, you know, and it's coon dogs, or you know, and you could put a squirrel dog in that. And essentially, if your dog would treat a squirrel, it'll most likely go after a coon in a cage. And then I've also seen, you know, barks per minute. You can win stuff just for doing barks per minute. How many times can this dog do it? And there's dogs that are doing, you know, 100 barks per minute. Every breath, they got something coming out. And then, of course, they do your standard, like, bench show. You know, they'll do the whole show. They'll judge your dog. You kind of have to put it on a pedestal. It has to hold a certain stance. And they'll look at its teeth and its paws. And, I mean, the competition side really gets pretty deep. And, again, you know, you never think people put the money behind it. But like you said, I mean, we're in America. You like something enough, you win some money somewhere on it. That's for sure.
Love that. Yeah. Well, man, I'd love to see you do some competitions, but I totally understand, you know, just want to keep it casual. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to, it's not so much for you. It's like you don't want to put it on your dog. You love him a lot, and you're like, you know what? I don't want to be frustrated or disappointed in you. You're a great dog. I love you. You do what I need you to do, and you're good for me. So I get that.
Yeah, and truthfully, I mean, I'll get hot enough in them woods by myself just pleasure hunting. I mean, they have seen me lose it. Those dogs, I mean, they're broke off deer. They don't chase deer or anything. But, of course, in order to get them broke off deer, you got to go watch them chase a few, you know. Mm-hmm. So
what did you do to train these dogs?
So, with Rusty, he, like I said, he kind of took to it naturally. But once it was there, you got to keep showing them squirrels. So, I mean, I'm no stranger to picking up a squirrel off the side of the road and throwing it in the truck on the way home and just, you know, tying it up in a tree and letting him tree one. You know, it's that was kind of the younger side of things. And, you know, same with River, even though he treated a younger age, it was really just staying in the woods. And I think all this was very well meant to be because, I mean, where my apartment sits right now is I had a whole 30-acre plot for over a year and a half that I could just cross the street and go tree squirrels all day long. No one ever stopped me. No one ever did anything. I mean, most people have to kind of load up the truck, go do something. And I didn't have to do that. And then even when I had to do that, you know, I actually timed it from my front door to the woods is 6 minutes till I can put a dog on the ground.
You right on it.
I'm right on it. And it's very much, even with my job, what I do, you know, the company I work for, I wouldn't say they fully support my hobby, but they understand that when it's hunting season, I might try to scoot out a little bit early. You know, so being able to just give them time in the woods. And then once you do get them on that tree, I mean, it's, you save squirrel tails when you shoot a squirrel and just, you know, drag it around the yard. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, for me, I go take them to the dog park. People think I'm crazy when I pull a squirrel tail out of my pocket, but hey, nice. I live in an apartment. I don't have a yard. What am I going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what made you take your whole adventure to TikTok or Instagram? I think I actually saw you on Instagram because William had called me one day and he's like, dude, I found this squirrel hunting guy. He's like, we got to get him on. I was like, dude, I was literally just fixing to call you and tell you, I saw this squirrel hunting guy on Instagram. We got to get him on.
Yeah. So what's funny is I've always been like, when I was coming out of high school, I was real big into fishing. I mean, I've always grown up fishing, but I would post these pictures on Instagram and it was like, you know, and that was a while ago, but I'd have these companies reach out to me, little sponsors here and there, and it was so rewarding, but I really liked how many people I connected with. So when I got into this hobby, I understood that this is like a really, it's not a very popular hobby. No one really, some people don't even know about it or know that you could do it the way I do it. So I was just like, man, there's got to be a way to show this. And no offense to anybody out there who's a squirrel hunter that's on social media, but I mean, a lot of these guys are a lot older and they're just, they don't really care to post. And if they do, it might not be the best video and that's okay. Whereas me, I'm like, exactly. Whereas me, I'm like, man, I could use this. A lot of people in my generation are, you know, less and less people are hunting every mm-hmm. year. So anything you can do to try to reverse that and just share that knowledge. And it's like, if I could show them a different light where it's like, hey, I'm not even killing a squirrel every time I go. I'm just watching some good dogs work. You know, it changes everything.
Yes, sir.
So, we were talking about squirrel tails earlier, and immediately I go to the MEPS.
That's the first thing I thought of, too.
Right. And the thing is, I've looked into that a couple times, and I'm like, when you take a look at what they pay, it's like, wait a second. So by the time I dry and, you know, get all these squirrels up to MEPS, like, it basically covers my cost of postage. You know, like you kill yourself. You got like 9 hours of labor, and they send you a check for $2.50. Oh,
but you can get more money if you do store credit.
Man, I don't know what MEPS is.
Lures, man.
But the last time I was at MEPS, they told me told me to turn my head and cough. So,
I don't know if Meps is a gay Meps. Bar or not, but we're talking about the fishing.
No, that's the military checkout right before you ship out to boot camp.
But so. If we got the entire Under Pressure Outdoors nation, like if we could get behind this, and I'm not saying we need the money, I was like, let's give it a charity or
be
whatever,
a fundraiser.
Like the whole idea of like, can we actually kill enough squirrels and mount enough tails? We send them all in at once. We might get $1,000.
How many tails?
That'd be cool.
We did like 5 or 10,000 tails to get $1,000.
How many tails you think we can pack into one flat rate shipping box?
A thousand.
yeah.
We just became a major threat to the squirrel population. I feel like, right,
but
now,
if we took that,
I think we're really onto something.
If we took that in Meps store credit, which Meps makes rooster tail fishing lures. Yeah. It's funny though. Now that I think about it, because it's like small game for what you would use to catch panfish. So small game,
they're
small
pickerel
fish.
Killers, man. Little fucking thing. Chain pickerel, eat them up. Little pike, but
yeah, but
we ain't got them down here really. I mean, a couple of pickerel, but
regardless,
they only show up when you're in a bass tournament.
If we chose to do store credit, we could become a dealer.
Let's do it.
Yeah,
they're just like, you know, hey, we're just going to ship you stock.
Listen,
the podcast checks are rolling in. We got $9.
We're gonna be popping rubber bands.
We'd have
your
to.
Your neighbors
have to,
are gonna be like, man, these guys got a shipping container for squirrel tails. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
That would be badass.
They're hanging in there, drying out like a tobacco barn.
You know, if we saved them up for a couple,
where'd they get these extra long ones?
Like, if we could save them up for a couple of seasons. Right? Can you imagine like sending Meps like 5,000 squirrel tails at once? I don't know.
Would they give us a letter of appreciation?
They get super picky. Like, have you ever looked at their website?
Yeah, there's quality.
Oh yeah, the quality that goes like the what they want out of tail quality, what they're gonna pay. I look at that, I'm like, yeah, you're just gonna jip me out of money because I live in the South. Because
I haven't started fur trapping is like we might have a month where they put on a good coat. And then the eyes are so low anyway.
It doesn't matter. If you live like south of the Mason-Dixon, east of the Mississippi,
yeah,
your fur prices are garbage.
Yeah, because I had a buddy who lived in Illinois. I had a buddy who lived in Illinois. He was our foreman on a ranch I worked at. And that dude put together like a full part-time living hunting raccoons. And he'd go out on his horse every night with his cur dogs and tree raccoons and shoot them with the .22 and sell the hides.
So when I was in Texas, looking at their squirrels, and they're gray squirrels. They call them fox squirrels because they do have their underbelly has a red tinge to them. When you look at, they're not like we know what fox squirrels are. Jackson fox squirrels lope around like cats, hang on pine trees,
Sherman fox squirrels,
and they're huge.
They're like the size of otters,
right? They're big cats.
They're like giant.
When you go to Texas and see their, when I was in East Texas, we were surrounded by these things when I was killing those pigs. I'm talking about gray squirrels that are the size of footballs. Like, as far as gray squirrels go, they're huge. You want to talk about this awesome, you know, 14-inch, thick, bushy-ass tail. Like, they're all over the place. Like, it'd be worthwhile to go over to Texas just to kill squirrels.
Damn our depressed ecology and the
year-round, by the way. So no season, no limit.
Load the dogs up in the dog box and let's go.
Let's go. Come on. We're doing road trips all the time. Baby. We're going to Louisiana tomorrow. We do
I can actually make that happen all the time. I think I can make that happen with that guy Nathan I met out
there. Let's do it.
I bet if we said, hey, man, we're going to pack up the dogs and we're going to come to East Texas for a weekend, he'd negotiate with his neighbor. Like, not negotiate. Like, there'd be no money.
Yeah.
We would bank squirrels.
What money are they making on squirrels to begin with? It's like, we'll throw you $500. Dude, four of us to just murder squirrels.
I guarantee that we could shoot more squirrels than the four of us could eat. Like, we could eat until we are.
Let's do it.
Just
absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you eat them. Like, what do you do with all the squirrels you kill? You eat them?
I'll fry them up, and a lot of people like to make dumplings out of them, things like that. I mean, you know, there's only so many ways you can do it. I say keep it pretty simple and just stick to one of the two because it's probably going to be the best.
The squirrel culinary world is fucking wide open.
Yeah. So listen, two years ago, I had I don't even know what I was out doing. I was out somewhere. It was me and you. We were out scouting for deer, and you shot that squirrel.
Yeah.
And
bacon.
I threw it in a brine, and I threw it in a beer brine.
This was we went out and we hunted in the WMA up here. It was me, you, Jim, and that other guy that came in from somewhere just to hunt on our guest permit.
Yeah. So, like, the week before, I threw that squirrel in a beer brine for, like, 4 days prior to that hunt. And I had all kinds of, I had, like, a chicken bouillon cube and all kinds of crap in that beer with it. And I just kept changing it out and keeping it fresh.
Tenderized it real well.
Yeah. And then we threw it in a cast iron skillet. And I'm talking about people were damn near fighting.
Cooked it.
We cooked it in a pound of bacon grease.
Yeah, cooked it in a pound of bacon grease, that cast iron skillet, and people were damn near fighting.
Like 9 people ate off that squirrel, man. But it was the best squirrel ever.
You could put a dog turd in a pound of bacon grease. Somebody would fight for it.
Listen, man, people, you might look at me like I'm crazy, man, but I have a quart mason jar that's about 4 inches deep in the bottom that's bacon grease. I don't just save bacon grease. I strain bacon grease. And then I like refine it. Like I have pure white bacon lard in that jar, and I just made green beans tonight on the grill and put some of that in there with the green beans to cook with the butter. Man, it makes all the difference in the world.
So those pigs I killed in Texas, like we kill pigs down here, and you strip them down, and they're almost like deer. There's hardly any fat on a lot of the Florida pigs. Those pigs we killed on in Texas that are making a living on the fields. And making a living on the protein feeders and the corn. That's just because Texas, like, you can't go 10 feet without running to a feeder. And they got pigs everywhere. So these pigs, and you start pulling the hide off them, and all you see is just a fat layer that's an inch and a half thick. So I've got all this pork fat. And I'm telling you, it's not just bacon. I mean, pork. Emeril Lagasse used to say pork fat rules. And I got to say, I never really understood it because I never killed a pig that had shit for fat on. And a lot of times the fat we get down here is kind of wonky.
Right.
Like you don't want to use it. I have a whole, like, there are places in the country, and I only know that one because I killed those two pigs in Texas. If you've got a pig that's making a living on grains and corn, oh my God, wild pig or not, it's unbelievable. So I was going with this whole bacon thing. It's not just bacon fat. It's pork fat.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I just don't have any other source of pork fat. But every time we make bacon, I render it down and make that clean.
You pour it through cheesecloth and everything.
Pour it through cheesecloth when I go to pour it in the jar. Actually, when I have new bacon grease, I pour it into a separate jar and then I render that several times with water. And actually, with bacon grease, man, you can do it in the microwave.
Yeah.
Until that. It usually takes me a couple days because I let it cool to see the color of it until it's good and white, and then I melt all my lard back down the microwave, and I pour that fresh lard in, mix it all together, and let it
solidify. You're working on basically straight glycerin at that point.
Oh yeah, beautiful. No, it's great stuff. And when you do that, it keeps for a really long time. Yeah, because you get all the meat out of it. Yeah, it's really stable stuff.
I got some at the house. I think I've had for 6 months or so, and it's fine.
But I cook with it all the time. I make eggs with it. I make everything. Every time I'm putting something in a frying pan, instead of using Pam, I'm using butter and or bacon grease.
That spray on stuff. It's funky, man.
It's garbage.
It leaves a sticky ass, and it's I don't know. Unless you're using straight Teflon, it makes your pans all sticky. I'm off the spray stuff.
No, cast iron. That's all I use.
I'm sure some bacon grease and squirrel would be good. You know, and trust me, I know there's people out there doing it. I just haven't. But it's, I don't know. It's one of those things. Like I wouldn't say that I shoot a squirrel every time I go, just because, you know, I got a Publix down the street. I'm not dying to eat the squirrel. It's not like it has to be a part of my diet. But you know, another thing is sometimes if I don't get to the squirrel first, my dogs will make a mess of it. And I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I've shot them out and I get to them, but they've ran off with them and I'm not, again, it's a squirrel. I'm not dying to have it. And I get to them and they've got legs chewed off of them, the ears chewed off of them. I'm like, all right, I don't want this thing anyways. Leave it out here for the coyotes.
You know, we talked about this before I started recording earlier, but last season we had a pretty good small game hunt and we walked away from that with 9 squirrels and had a couple in the freezer, which put me up around 12 squirrels. And I took those and I just did a straight saltwater brine for a couple days and then pulled those off, and my wife cooked them, simmered them in like chicken stock, and then peeled all the meat off the bone, and she made essentially chicken and dumplings with the squirrel meat. And what? And then she made what are the butter swim biscuits? But that's exactly what they are. They're swimming in butter when they're in the oven. And when they're done, they soak up all the butter out of the pan. And oh my God.
I've only had a handful of your wife's meals, but I know if I was married to your wife, I'd weigh 450 pounds.
Look, I was 190 pounds when I got married. I'm not 190 pounds anymore. What crazy recipe we got on our website? I think we got a pretty crazy squirrel recipe on our website.
Oh man, my laptop's not sitting right in front of me. So,
but you got your phone.
I know.
I think you've got the Castilian squirrel. I've been totally delinquent.
I was going to say that was on Jim there. Jim was the one doing all the recipes. Small game, braised, and cotillion. Jim, I don't even know how to pronounce that.
Catalan.
Sofregret.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So it's sofrit. But if you go to the UPO, oh my God, what's our website?
UPONation.co.
If you go to the UPONation.co, it's not that complicated recipe. And if you really get into the true cotillion style, they have the special thing they cook it in. But screw that, man. You can do it in cast iron. It works great. It's an awesome recipe. It's really good. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers picked it up at one point. It's on their website. But and I'm not bragging about the recipe so much as it's just guys kill all these squirrels, and then they're like, well, what do we do with them? And all they do is try to break them down, and they try to fry them, and they don't brine them. And it's okay. But you can – squirrel meat is excellent. Absolutely excellent table fare. It just takes a little bit of work. But we're out there killing them, 10 and 12 of them at a time. You can make a hell of a meal.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of people overlook it just because, you know, it's a squirrel. It's your typical thing. I mean, there's always someone who don't want to eat it because they're more or less not scared of it. You know, it's the fear of the unknown type deal. Sure. But I always say, I mean, it's not going to kill you to try it once, but at least when you try it, make sure you did everything you could to make it taste pretty decent. Because like you said, you get people that just come out of the woods with it and fry it. And some people don't mind it, but if you do nothing to it, if you don't brine it, if you don't try to make at least a decent batter for it or something, you might think it's really not that good. And then you're robbing yourself of a whole sport. I mean, because obviously no one's going to just come out. I mean, there's people out there that are going to kill and not eat them, which is, you know, if you're doing that every single time and you're killing a pile of squirrels and you throw them in the ditch, I mean, that's pretty bad. But
wanting ways.
You know, I don't exactly. Know.
We got some guys down here that are of Hmong extraction. They're Vietnamese, but they're a Vietnamese-Cambodian, but they're actually a separate, forgive the lack of a better term, tribal thing. But we have some guys that are Hmong, H-M-O-N-G, down here that run around to some of our WMAs, and we all know who they are.
Dude, I think they climb the trees and yank them out of the nest.
Like, dude, they're straight-up killers, but those guys are out there in the woods just torching them up with a butane torch.
Oh, yeah.
And they eat everything.
Oh, my gosh.
That is not the way I'd advise you to squirrel. If you take a squirrel out of the woods and you just, like, tear the skin off and throw it in a frying pan, you're probably going to be disappointed because that sucker's going to be tough.
I don't know. That's what I did my first one. He ran across the fence, and I had my bow with like a little small game tip on it. I shot that joker right off the top of the fence, and I skinned him and put him in a Ziploc bag and wrote Trevor on it. And my wife was like, what is this? I said, that's Trevor.
Well,
and she's like, what is Trevor? I was like, Trevor was a squirrel. Trevor is tonight's dinner. So I ate Trevor, and I put him in some – I basically chicken fried him. And in a cast iron skillet with some bacon grease, and it turned out great. So bacon grease is king. I think that's the moral of our story.
Very briefly, to anybody that's listening to this, take your squirrels. Just give them, be patient. 24 hours in some buttermilk, maybe add a little salt to it, and that'll break that protein down. They'll be nice and tender, and then you can use them damn near any way you want. And they'll be fantastic. And for lack of, I don't really know what the, it's hard to describe because squirrel does not taste like chicken, but it is. Sweet's not the right term. But good squirrel that's tender is a very flavorful meat. Venison, I find, is not. I love venison, but it's not really flavorful. Squirrel, unfortunately, is not much of it, but it actually is a fantastic tasting animal. So, moving on.
Oh. Where are we moving on to?
I don't know. We've talked about competition. We've talked about the love of dogs. And, you know, although we've kind of danced around it, this gentleman clearly has a love for his two feists. And, you know, I've heard you a couple times sound like you almost have to defend the feists. comparison to cur dogs and everything else. And I was listening to it saying, man, you have a dog. And although it's a little smaller dog, it's a specialist. And it is a natural squirrel killing machine. And that's the beauty in it, man. It's you have the relationship between the dog handler and the dog. Incredibly loyal. You just don't see that anywhere else. And to me, that's the beauty. And I'm a guy that's allergic to dogs. I can't own one. And maybe that's why I find that relationship so special. But my favorite kinds of hunting, whether I love duck hunting, much better with a retrieving dog.
You know, for sure.
Breyer's dog, Lib, you know, or your dog, Bell. And Breyer's dog, or Jordan's dog, Bell. Any dog that retrieves trees, I love it.
So I tell you what I'd like to know, Spencer. Tell me a couple of your favorite stories so far with these two.
Oh, absolutely, man. Some of the favorite stories are actually probably some of the ones that, you know, on paper seem like a terrible time. I mean, it's just, but it's the total journey of it and whatnot. I mean, and I definitely, like I said, you know, because I don't have this land and whatnot, you know, a lot of this is, you could, I mean, I don't live in a city by any means. It's a real small town, but I'm in a very much, you know, developed area doing what I do. As far as, you know, walking the dogs down with my gun in the bag and going to the truck, I'm coming down from the second floor and I got all this orange and camo on. I mean, I get a lot of looks and stuff, but I think one of my favorite stories, cause I really just, it was actually the last squirrel that I killed of this season. It was one of those things where it was like, man, everything was fell into place. It was meant to be. I think God really just had his hand in that moment and was like, I got you. So basically, my dog River treed. I mean, nothing out of the ordinary, just treed. I went in there. I was like, man, he's sounding good day, whatever, pretty outside. Sure enough, there's a squirrel up there. And as I mentioned, you know, I have this little single shot 410 because I'm not a good shot, and I'll go through some bullets. I mean, a 410 is not cheap, so we got to do one shot at a time. Well, I've had three different shots at this squirrel, which in a single shot is me reloading every time. So I had plenty of time to hit this thing and just couldn't. And I reached down in my pocket and I couldn't believe it. I just had no bullets with me. I guess I just took the three that I had on the stock of a gun and that was it. And sure enough, the squirrel gets away and I'm just like, but I can see it. And I'm just like, well, you know, that is what it is. I guess I'm out of luck. But my dog was sounding so good and something was just told me, like, go up to the truck. Like, I bet you got a bullet in there. But I don't know how to explain this. I had just cleaned out my truck and all my hunting stuff. I didn't have a bullet in there. Like, I'm telling you, I would have kept track of it. I walk up to the truck. I'm going through this bag, and I'm like, man, what an idiot. And I left River in there on the tree a couple hundred yards away. Sure enough, I'm, like, going through everything, and I found this. And I hadn't used this in probably over a year. Just this old bullet sling that was just tucked in the very top of the bag. And I grabbed it, and sure enough, there's one 410 bullet sitting in there. And, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was like, there's no way. There's no way. And then I just thought, well, now I got to get back to the tree. I hope the squirrel's still there. I hope he's still there. I go back, and this is a gray squirrel. I mean, we all know how finicky they are. This thing is sitting right in the pitch of the tree. And sure enough, I took the shot, had it, one bullet left. It fell out, and that's pretty much what happened.
Do your dogs, when the dog trees the squirrel, and let's say it's there, it's doing its thing, and you let fly, and then the squirrel doesn't fall out of the tree. Does your dog turn around and look at you like, what happened?
Oh, yeah.
I did my part. Yeah. That's absolutely universal. Duck dogs do it. Ducks, the ducks come, wham, 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 and nothing is water. The dog turns around and looks at you like,
come on, man.
Yeah, but quail dogs do it. They're like, hey, I'm working here. You know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I feel like an idiot because, I mean, for me, it's like I don't have the best eyesight either. I'm like, man, when am I going to see this little squirrel again? You know,
yeah.
I mean, so for me to be able to go to my truck, find that bullet, go back to it, and it forever to just all fall in place. And then that was 3 days before the season closed. I mean, that was just it was perfect. I mean, it was perfect.
Part
it all came together.
Part of that story is prime example of why when my wife asks, hey, why is all of this shit in your truck when it's hunting? Like, when it's hunting, she's like, why don't you take this shit out when you're not hunting? I'm like, because if I take it out, I'm going to go somewhere and I'm going to be like, I can use that. That's in my truck. And then if I've taken it out, I'm going to have forgotten to put it back in.
You're talking.
And then I'm going to be SOL on whatever I needed. So if I just leave everything in the truck, I know everything's there. And something, even if like it's that one shotgun, I left that one sling in my truck and I had one shotgun shell in it. That's going to save my day.
You say that, man. If I go and look through my truck right now, I bet I can find at least 10 22 bullets. I can probably find a couple 22 Magnum.
Oh, I know for a fact. I know
I can find 10 or 15 shotgun shells.
Yeah. I know for a fact there's ammo in probably every door pocket of my truck.
Yeah.
I have the stupid tactical things on the back with all the pockets in them. There's ammo in every single one of them. There's a 22 Magnum thing of shells up underneath my driver's seat.
Like, it's not that my truck is a mess. I just store all that stuff in any little compartment. Like you said, in the door pockets, in my center console, in my glove box, in the little flaps on the back of the seat.
Yeah, like you're cleaning, when you clean the truck out, you're like, nah, I don't want to take this out. I'm just going to stick it right here.
Yeah.
Well, so I think the kicker and all that is like, I'm actually a very like, I mean, you could say my girlfriend would definitely say OCD. I mean, I like everything in its place. I mean, even if I have a lot of stuff, it's going to be an organized a lot of stuff. So when I tell you that I didn't think I had a bullet, like that's me knowing that like that truck is clean. There's nothing in there. It's vacuumed. Like it's like there's nothing in that truck. And something, again, something would just like go look anyways. And for that to fall the way it did, I mean, it wouldn't happen again. I don't think, even if I had the extra bullet, the squirrel wouldn't be there. I mean, it all couldn't line up like that one more time. It was too perfect.
That's something else.
It's the love of hunting, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife doesn't understand. She's like, why do you got all these bags in your car? I'm like, well, there's all these Ziplocs because when you shoot something, you got to have Ziplocs. Why do you need all these wipes? Because then my hands are messy. Why do you need this? Why do you need that? I'm like, but we're all that way. I mean, we start hunting like September 1, moorhen season, or right through turkey, and then in between is fishing season. And you just, that shit has to be in your truck because you don't always need every piece, but all of those pieces of gear get used at least once or twice during the season. And when you don't have it, it's just the end of the world, right? It's like a crisis.
That's why I don't like, I mean, I wholly appreciate the, like, hey, man, I'll split gas with you. But every time I ride with somebody else, I'm like, I know, I'm going to forget something. And the something I forgot, it's in my truck.
Dude, the Grand Master is Steve Christian. Whenever I've gone hunting with Steve Christian.
I'm not surprised, but.
He's got all kind. Well, yeah, it's a Navy SEAL thing. But you go and you're like, oh, shit, for whatever. I don't have it. And Steve's like, I got it. It doesn't matter if it's water. You know, he constantly rolls with, like, I don't know, 50 gallons of water in his truck.
He didn't even smoke cigarettes. He'd be like, damn, I'm down a cigarette. He's like, I got your back.
Sounds like my buddies with the old tackle box, man. I swear, I think my buddies know when we go fish. None of my buddies really, really hunt either. I mean, I'm pretty much solo out there all the time. So when we go fishing, they're always like, oh, Spence, you don't happen to have extra. And I always got it for them.
No, we go canoeing.
For, you know what I'm saying?
There's three guys that you can almost always count on, like when we do the Suwannee trip, that you don't have to bring shit, because if you didn't bring anything between Steve Miller,
oh God, yeah,
Steve Christian, and Gene Weldon, they have it.
Well, we're down
something you're going to have to join us for.
Yeah, we're down a Gene this year, but Steve Miller, and I know, even though we got somebody cooking for us, and I think by the when this comes out, we'll be leaving that Saturday, the Saturday this when this podcast comes out, to go on.
Miller's the quartermaster, man.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. He's like, I'm still bringing XYZ. I was talking to him the other day, and I was like, hey man, you do what you got to do, bud.
Right. Well, Gene Weldon, the coffee, right? Like, he brings out the thing, he grinds his own beans, he's got his thermometer in there keeping the coffee at the right temperature. It's beautiful, man. This guy,
Steve,
it's Kush, man.
Steve is in a canoe by himself. But the entire canoe is completely full.
Yeah, 750 pounds of gear.
Yeah. He's got like four different totes in that canoe just full of stuff.
Dude, I think
that kind of guy, man.
A squirrel hunting expedition down the Suwannee would be fun. I think we've talked about that before.
I know, the timing
would be
just
interesting. Yeah, but the timing is a little wonky.
Yeah. I want to plan some type of hunting trip within that route, because we cross through like three WMAs. Mm-hmm.
Not only that, you can go down there and sometimes just do that noise, and you can get the whole damn woods to start chirping at you at some places.
Yeah,
you know. So I don't know. We always say it, but we never do it, because I don't know, man. Once you get out there, you know, there's places you put on the Suwannee, and like, there's some logistics. Like, you're going to be, it's not like you're just going to go out for the day unless you got a motorboat.
The river is ridiculously high this year, so we'll see.
You might be cooking with some speed.
Yeah, we'll see.
No, we're
going to I think that might be one of the draws to the competition side of things is you get to go to all, like, as one of the reasons I would do it is, you know, you get to go to all these different land spots that you really wouldn't get to go to, because a lot of these guys will sacrifice their own personal farm to have us, you know, run a competition on there. And it's like, you're not going to get that opportunity elsewhere, you know, so you might as well go where you know they're putting you in thick squirrels and give it a shot, and you could end up in other states. I mean, obviously, like y'all said, just going down a little bit South Florida, you never know what's out there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it'd be really, really neat to see them run in some more, like, hill country or mountainous area. I know, like, you say fights, and every time you say fights, the only person I can ever think of that has said anything about fights is Clay Newcomb. I think he has a couple that he hunts
yeah,
with.
Yeah, yeah. It's a thing. I mean, like, so, I mean, my dog River, really, if you trace his bloodline back, I mean, it's all, like, Kentucky, like, Appalachian, like, that realm. I mean, even when I went and got him, Carrollton, Georgia's not, it's not super north, but you're, you know, it's like a Huntsville-esque. It's, yeah. I mean, there's some hills compared to Florida, you know?
It's foothilly.
Exactly, exactly. And, I mean, I've always wanted to see it, just because I want to see what my dog does in different areas. You know, I mean, any dog can run in a flat, straight line for a pretty good while. You know, it's like you put him in some altitude with a little bit of hills, it might not be so easy. He might not do the same, or who knows? He could be fantastic, but, you know, don't know till you try.
Hey. Have you thought about taking him out of state, going like Georgia or Alabama and hunting some fox squirrels?
So I definitely want to do some fox squirrels, because you can't obviously get them in Florida. Right. I mean, they're here, but you can't kill them. I mean, in Mississippi, down in the Delta, they even have, like black squirrels. That's crazy. I mean, they're just midnight black. So I've thought about that. I've got some family in Georgia that, you know, I could maybe find a connection through. But, I mean, honestly, for anybody wanting to get involved in this, I mean, I've found some really open arms as far as, like, you going on these Facebook pages. Even guys that have dogs that are, you know, the major league of squirrel hunting, as you'd call it, they're still so accessible and so easy to talk to. And they'll connect you, or at least show you where to go. If they don't have somebody, they'll get you in touch with someone who does have somebody.
Yeah, the barrier to entry into small game hunting is really low.
Amen.
You can pick up a .22 pretty cheap. You can pick up a single shot shotgun pretty cheap, and you can get out. The seasons are long, and the public lands are open. You can get out and just hunt.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, the only requirement that I think is somewhat of an expense is you do have to have a tracking collar, but you don't have, I mean, and Garmin's, if you wanted the nicest thing, Garmin's are, you know, $1,000, but I use Dogtra, which is also, it's competition accepted. It's a good brand, but it's, you know, I think I picked these up on a sale on like Chewy.com, you know, and they're neon green. So they're not whatever color everybody wants. Who cares what color it is, you know? And I think I got two of them for, you know, $600 on some buy one, get one sale. And that is, you know, $500 is a good bit of money. But once you buy it, it's good for years. You can get warranties with them. And then at that point, all you need the dog. And like you said, a little cheapo gun, you throw them in the truck. You don't need a dog box. You don't have to put them in the box, you know.
Put them in the back seat. Shoot, mine rides in the front seat most of the time.
Oh, I mean, when it's real cold, I put them in the truck. I mean, that's, you know.
We've talked about it a couple times that we've had some guests that are really good at what they do. But when you're talking about some of the guys that are just excellent hunters, I don't mean excellent deer hunters. I'm talking about excellent hunt. Cameron Gordon comes to mind.
Yeah.
The guy kills everything, right? And he's a public land guy, and he's a no frills guy. But Cameron Gordon, we used to call him the, you know, Florida's greatest small game hunter, right?
And he is,
argued he's one of the best, you know.
He's the anti Mary Poppins.
Yeah. And he looks just like Jerry Reed. You know, he's got that trucker hat on. But what I was kind of going with that is all the guys that I know that are dyed in the wool, like, they're not deer hunters, they're not quail hunters, they're just hunters. They all hunt small game. And sometimes they maybe get pegged as a small game hunter, but going back to guys like Cameron Gordon kills turkeys, Cameron Gordon kills deers, Cameron Gordon kills pigs. He can do it. And part of the reason he's good at that is because he spends so much time pounding the ground around here, small game hunting, and you pick up so much. We've talked about, it's been a while since we've talked about it on the podcast, that if you want to be a good, especially public land deer hunter, pig hunter, whatever it is, you better be a good small game hunter.
You build a lot of woodsmanship.
It's so many of the skills are transferable to everything else. And I think that sometimes new hunters that aren't already hunters, right? They come in and they want to just kill deer, right? And you can do that, right? We could take everybody we know and put them on a deer, so to speak. But the reason we can do that is because we've built the know-how, and most of that know-how really has come from small game hunting.
Right.
Yeah, I would definitely say being out there, I mean, again, I grew up going into the woods and camping and shooting guns, but again, I was not a hunter. I was a fisher. That's what I did, fishing the flats. I mean, I grew up and I still do that. I mean, that's what I occupy my summers with. But, you know, the amount of times that I've gone somewhere that I knew for a fact I would have not gone this deep in the woods or in this location had this dog not gotten treed, had this dog not found some small game and taken it here. You know, one that has led to me being lost out there. That's a time to be had, but you know, you learn from it. You learn, you know, you learn to stay calm. You learn to just figure it out and get back to the truck. And obviously with the technologies today, you can pin your location and you know, try to track yourself out of there. But I definitely think, you know, chasing squirrels through the woods or, you know, my dogs have chased rabbits a few times. It's like doing that has been able to get me in an area of the woods that, like, I mean, one, you see some of the most beautiful things because you'd have never stumbled upon it otherwise. And two, it's just, like you said, it's the woodsmanship of like, man, I'm out here now. I need to keep my head on my shoulders. I need to understand gun safety, understand the rules, where I'm at, you know, where I'm going as far as trespassing. All that, I think, can kind of be overlooked. Like you said, if someone just hops into it and they just want to go kill something, they just look at it as like, I just go get a gun and nail a deer. It's like, I mean, you can. I'm sure you could get, if you sit around long enough, you might get lucky. But there's a lot more that goes right into it than just buying a gun and walking out of your truck.
Mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, Spencer, I don't want to keep you all night. You guys got any closing thoughts?
Man, I'm going to say just don't sleep on small game. There's a lot of people, like when we do our small game hunts, we're like, come join us. They're like, nah, I want to shoot a pig or I want to learn to deer hunt.
Let me tell you. If you want to learn to deer hunt and you want us to, like, that's the best time because people come to me and they're like, hey, man, I'll learn to deer hunt. I'm like, dude, it's November. I'm deer hunting. I can't teach you to deer hunt right now. You come around in February, we're going to hunt squirrels. I can show you fresh sign. I can show you scrapes. I can show you rubs. I can show you everything while we're hunting squirrels and, like, talk you up and down about where to go, how to sit with the wind and everything else that I can't do while we're deer hunting. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely the time to be there.
Yeah, showing them this is where a pinch point is. Yeah. This is what a pinch point really looks like.
Right.
And you can start to find them on Google, but we talk about it ad nauseum. You have to get out there, and small game hunting is a gift. The payload's not great, but if you like to shoot and you like to have success, nothing beats small game hunting.
Vince?
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, I would just say, Spencer, I'd encourage you to get out there and kind of take the next step. I know you're right there, and you might have your reasons and stuff, but it sounds like your next big step is doing the thing, and I'm excited for you. I'd like to see you do it and just get opportunities in different states and go out there and grow with your dogs and see what that looks like for you. And man, just keep us up to date on TikTok, man. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think you're onto something there. I think I've just been avoiding for a little bit, but you know, my biggest thing is obviously I love when people go to my TikTok and are able to go look at those things and see the different sides of it that they never knew about. But man, well, if people have questions, reach out to me. I'm more than happy to answer.
Plug your TikTok for us real quick.
Yeah, so the TikTok's going to be Rusty River Game Dogs. And then if you want to find me on Facebook, it's Spencer Lane, Lane. I'm up here in Freeport, Florida. Like I said, if you're interested in knowing more about dogs or how to get connected, or even just if you're looking for a breeder to ask questions, because I don't know everything. I mean, I will give you all the knowledge I have and connect you with anybody I can get you in touch with.
Man, that's great. I appreciate it.
What you got, Jim?
You know, a couple things, man. I think we got to get Cameron Gordon back on. It's been a while since he's been on.
It has been a
minute. And he's just such a great human being. You know, kind of knowing what's new and good in his life. But you know, I was thinking about how refreshing this is because we spend time, so much time talking about all the other stuff and the things that, like the deer hunting and all the big payload. And we used to really do talk a lot about small game hunting, and this has been a great change.
We're kind of in that off season right now where we talk a lot about different stuff.
Man, I'd love to get up with him and see him run his dogs.
I know, man. That's what I'm saying.
I want to get up there with a camera. And just,
no, let me tell you what. I hate to say it, but my dogs are getting up there. I got a couple of mutts, 10 and 12, and I know that their days are limited, but when they do pass, I can't not have a dog, but I definitely want to get a squirrel dog. So hopefully by that time, hopefully by that time you're breeding some dogs.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And I'll get me a Rusty River Game Dog.
Mm. Man, we'll put them in the right hands. My whole goal is, you know, just overall, just spread the sportsmanship of just being outdoors and having a good dog and understanding that and putting in the hands of people that are going to hunt them and show that world and show it the right way.
Yeah,
maybe that's what we ought to do next season. We've talked about, like, we did the Georgia thing, and
yeah.
It's funny, I didn't make that hunt, but we've talked about going places, and some of our local squirrel hunts, they're great and they're well attended, but to keep it fresh, maybe we might not have as many guys go, but maybe that's something we could focus on, is trying to call a few places where the squirrels are good. It is a bit of a road trip. You know, not making it some 7-day excursion because it takes too much time. But just agree to meet. We're going to road trip. We're going to bail. We're going to leave on a Thursday night. We're
Like drive a 4-day weekend is perfect for that. Yeah.
And really get on them. And it'd be great to have, you know, in the mix. It'd be neat to have some squirrel dogs just to see what it's like. Because I've never hunted squirrels behind a dog. I'd love to.
Mm-hmm. Spencer, what do you got for closing thoughts?
Oh, man. Like I said, anybody have questions, please reach out to me. I think this is something that's just been a real blessing to me. I think it could really, really help others just see the side of things they don't know about, you know, just the overall sportsmanship that, I mean, for all of us to be able to get on this podcast, and we all have our own specialties that we hunt and what we do, but, you know, here we are coming together to talk about a common goal of just enjoying the outdoors. And you know, there's always going to be more people to go against that than there are for it. So we got to stick together and just work with each other and just advocate for everyone's hobby to just make it as healthy as we can.
Amen.
Well, Spencer, I really appreciate you joining us, and hell or high water, I got to try and make it up your way next year to watch them dogs work, because I would. That's always been a dream of mine as a kid, is to have a squirrel dog and to watch a squirrel dog work.
Absolutely, man. Hey, like we said earlier, we're doing it for the dogs, so they'd love it. They want nothing else to do but that.
Yeah, just put on a show.
That's right.
Well, thank you, sir. You have a good night.
All righty. Y'all as well.
We'll catch you guys next week. As always, we thank you guys so much for being part of the Under Pressure Outdoors family and hope you enjoyed the show. If you'd like to help us out, first and foremost, if you haven't already, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and tell us what you like about the show. If you want exclusive access to hunts and the ins and outs of specific WMAs and why we choose to hunt there and a lot of other sweet stuff we have planned, join our Patreon. So far on the docket for this year, we'll be hosting 2 whitetail camps and 2 small game hunts at a minimum. Plus, you'll get a sweet discount code to save when you shop the UPO Nation website, as well as get early access and discounts on future events. It's $5 a month, and it'll pretty much pay for itself. As always, if you have any questions you'd like answered on the show, reach out to us on social media or at underpressureoutdoors@gmail.com. We'll catch you guys next week.